Good morning and welcome back to Nachiyomi. Today we're focusing on Melachim Beis Perek Dalet. This is a unique Perek in the sense that we step out of the national picture and we move into Elisha, the miracle worker. We move from the big picture down to a few small incidents which occur, which are essentially the credentials of Elisha. We've really only seen Elisha to a large degree in the shadow of Eliyahu. We've seen a few small actions, a few small episodes that have occurred at the beginning of his career. Now we're going to see numerous miracles that occur through Elisha. So let's start with them. The first part of the Perek deals with Elisha and this poor woman. What goes on? She's the wife of one of the Bnei HaNevi'im, and she comes to Elisha and she says, "My husband has passed away. You know that he was a servant of Hashem. He feared Hashem. And we're at a point where the creditors are coming to take our children as slaves. He was in debt, and they're coming to take our children as collateral for our debt." So Elisha says to her, "What is it that you have at home?" She says, "Well, all we have is a little bit of an oil flask." So he says, "Well, here's what you should do. Go to all your neighbors and asked him to borrow as many kalim, as many vessels, jugs, pitchers, pots as you possibly can." And that's what she does. And he says, "Now go into your house, close the door with you and your son inside, and start pouring from the oil flask into these containers. And keep pouring, don't stop. It's going to fill them all up." And that's what she does. She closes it and she carries on pouring, and the oil keeps pouring and pouring and pouring. She fills up all these pots. She has a huge amount of oil by the end of it. She's able to sell the oil and pay off her debts. That's the end of miracle number one. Let's just stop here for a quick moment to go on to basic points. Who is this woman? So obviously she's the wife of one of the Bnei Nevi'im, which is clear, which the Tanakh tells us. But the Mefarshim points out, quoting the Chazal, that this is actually the wife of Ovadia. Ovadia was one of the contemporaries of Eliyahu, and his uniqueness, as Tanakh told us in Melachim Aleph, was that he had saved 100 of the prophets from the massacre of Izebel and hid them in the caves and financed them in the caves while they were being hunted. Which meant that Chazal point out that he had a lot of. I mean, imagine supporting 100 people in hiding. What do you do? So in order to be able to support them, he took out a credit line, and he was he had a very expensive credit card, because of this mitzvah. But he died in debt, and now the king the debts were handed over to the king, and so Yehoram, the king of Israel, was coming to collect the debts. And her argument was the thing that he did, the fact that he saved other people from death and saved other people from being put into prison, should not allow him to have his children put in prison. It's not we'll call it divinely fair that such a thing should happen. That's why she spoke to Elisha, and this is why this miracle occurred. Why does the door need to actually be closed for this miracle to happen? Meaning, why can't this just be a little more explicit? So Rashi points out that he says that kavod hanes hu lavoi b'hetzner, that the honor of the nes should be that it comes quietly, or the way the Gemara usually says it is, ena bracha shiruya ela b'masha samamina ayin, that bracha comes in a place which is hidden from the eye. And that's why it's done this way. The Malbim points out that maybe it is ayin hara, it's not that it can interfere with the nes, but that if you have a person who's a negative force, it can break the equilibrium of allowing the Shefa, allowing that divine flow to happen for this miracle. Okay, good. This is miracle number one. Let's move on to miracle number two. So Elisha moves through northern Israel to the Har Ephraim, and whenever he stops in a place called Shunem, there is this very good woman, which is a strong person, who says, "Look, Elisha is an Ishalokim, he's holy. Let's make for him his own place. Let's make for him his own room." So she says, "Whenever you come through here, Elisha, this is your room. This is where you'll stay." Okay, so that's what he does. And Elisha is very, very, very happy with this. So he turns to Gehazi. Gehazi is one of his helpers. We'll see, but we'll find out a little more about him later on. And he says to go speak to the lady and say, ask her what she wants. Does she want us to speak to the king, to the Sarat Savot, to the general of the armies, anything that she wants? And her response is unique. She says, "Besoich ami anochi yoshaves. I sit among my people." So Gehazi notices that her husband's old, she has no children, And probably what she would really, she probably really wants is a child. So Elisha sends her a word that in a year's time you will have a child. Okay, and that's going to be her response to this. Just incidentally, before going further, what does she mean when she says, I so the Mefarshim point out that this day that he spoke to her was Rosh Hashanah. And he said to her, what would you like in your dinner for the future year? And her response is as much as there's things I want, on Rosh Hashanah, I don't stick myself out. I don't look different to everybody else. I don't want to make myself unique when it comes to Rosh Hashanah. And that's why she sort of subsumes herself in the people, because we succeed in din when we are besoich ami. This is a very, very interesting way of looking at life, a very interesting way of acting. But when she was creating this room, by the way, just incidentally, the Ralbag points out it's practically that's, you know, so he should have his own toothbrush and his own microwave, you know, so meaning to say he didn't have to use everybody else's utensils every time he came in, you know, you can imagine, you know, all the, you know, eating, you know, Cheerios at the same table as, you know, the family. She wanted to give him his own space. Whereas the Malbim says no, she saw that he was Kaddosh, so she wanted to create almost like a Mishkan for him, that he would have his own. It's almost like a place for the residence of the Shekhinah, which accompanied Elisha. So whether Kabbalistically or practically, that's what she was doing, and this is how he rewarded her. The problem is that a few years later, her son had grown up a little bit, and he was busy harvesting with his father, and he complains, Roshi, Roshi, my head. He goes back to the house, he lies with his mother and dies. I mean, right there. Tanakh says Vayomas, he dies. So she immediately gets onto the puts him on the bed of the prophet, and she goes and she gets a donkey, and off she goes. She says, "I'm going to go visit the prophet." And her husband says, "But it's not the regular times. It's not Shabbos. It's not Rosh Chodesh." She says, "Shalom, peace," and off she goes. And she comes to Elisha, and Elisha says, "Oh, he says, go see how she's doing. How's her husband? How's her child?" And she says, Shalom. Again, she responds, Shalom. She's not answering. She's obfuscating the answer. And she comes and she grabs his feet, the prophet's feet, and she says, well, before Gehazi can push her away, she says, I asked from you something from my master. Don't trick me now. So she doesn't even say what happened. She doesn't explain the predicament, but it's clear that she's talking about her child. So what happens is, Elisha realizes that something's happened. He immediately sends Gehazi early, and he says, "Go ahead and place my mishenes, or my cloak, on this young man, and I'll meet you there." So Gehazi goes and he tells him, "Don't speak to people on the way. Go do this immediately." It's interesting. The Mishnah Chochma and Parshas Vayera points out that she never answers her husband. She never answers the prophet about her son being dead. And that's because at this point in time, she doesn't want to say those words yet, because she wants the gzeirah. If there's a heavenly decree that her son should die, she doesn't want to say it on this earth, because she doesn't want it to become to fruition. She just says, Shalom, Shalom. She doesn't even say to Elisha what's happening. Is because she wants to, she's holding on to the hope that somehow the decree is not being finished, and that Elisha can reverse it. That's what's really happening in her mind. When he sends Gehazi ahead, Elisha essentially what he's trying to do is trying to work out, did he just faint, or is this actually death? So off they go, and Gehazi responds to Elisha, no, there's no answer, he's not waking up. Okay, so Elisha walks into the room, and very much similar to what Eliyahu did years back when it came to the child of the Almona, he lies on top of him, prostrates himself on top of this child, and sort of blows into him life force, and the child wakes up and he gives her back to his mother. Very, very powerful miracle. Once again, replicating what his master did, we're going to see that Elisha does this twice, not just once, because he asked for pishnaim, he asked for double what his master Eliyahu could do. Last two very quick episodes at the end of the parak. Is that he comes to Gilgal, which is not his really regular home territory, and there's a terrible famine in the land. There's no food to eat, so he comes to the Bnei Nevi'im, these the prophets, and he sets up a big pot to feed them. But what happens is that somebody who obviously not aware of what's going on went to the field and picked berries off the tree, but these were poison berries, and puts them into the pot. So they pour out the food for everybody. And it turns out that they realize the bitterness means so that tasting poison. They turn and say to Elisha, what should we do? So Elisha just throws flour into the pot and neutralizes the poison again, miraculously, almost taking us back to the miracle of the water, the bitter water, which Elisha is healing right now. Finally, last episode is an ish comes from Baal Shalisha, and he brings with him 20 lechem of bikurim, and they're made of barley. And he comes up and he says, and Elisha gives them to everybody else and says, eat from them. And they eat, and there's going to be more, which means to say that hundreds of people are eating and nobody is finishing up the bread. Sounds almost like they're coming back to the first miracle in the parak, which is the miracle of the oil, the endless oil, which Elisha is performing on the behalf of these people. Things to notice about this as a whole is that, first of all, Elisha is always in the mode of saving. He's not in the mode of decreeing, interestingly enough, at this point. And a lot of this are miracles of continuous flow, of extending the flow of the life force through what already is into a greater miracle. We have to ask ourselves, what is in common? I'm just going to put this out. What is in common with all these four miracles? And why is it that we're being told this before we return to the national picture? In the meantime, have a wonderful, meaningful day.